As always, we have great readings today to pray with, to sit with, as God teaches us today in his own words in every era. To spend a little time on the first reading, just for a moment to set the stage for the gospel. As you understand, at this time of the year, the first reading is always matched up with what the gospel wants to get at. In the first book of Kings, we meet the historic and powerful figure of Elijah. Elijah has just been sent running for his life because he has stood up to the false prophets of Baal, the high priestess, the queen, and her husband, the king. And they have threatened his life. He runs to Mount Horeb, and there he finds himself in our reading today. And what does he have to do? He has to do something very important for a prophet and for all of us as well. He has to listen carefully to the voice of God. He wants to know what he's supposed to do next because he's under threat and things are changing around him and he doesn't know what to do. And one thing among a lot that the reading tells us for today is that it would seem that God's voice might be shifting, at least as far as Elijah knew how to listen for it. How do I mean that? In the book of Exodus, when Moses heard God's voice speaking, there was fire, rocks being crushed, mighty winds, earthquakes, fireworks, lots of grand signs from heaven, and all of that God spoke. That might be what they were used to for a while, the people of Israel and the prophets included. Now Elijah gets to the mountaintop to be where God is, and in all the things that it's described, rocks getting crushed, the wind, the fireworks, etc., Elijah realizes God is not in those things. There's lots of chaos swirling around outside of the cave, lots of voices in the world, and Elijah realizes, rightly so, those voices are not God anymore. God has gone more subtle so that we can listen more sharply and sharpen our senses. So God kind of backs off a bit to teach us how to listen more effectively sometimes. So what does Elijah do? Something very important for him and for us, he has to figure out God's voice in the chaos swirling around him and pick it out correctly. And as he does so, he knows what he's supposed to do. So he is discerning, he is listening, and then he acts. That's a great movement for any of us to cultivate, right? Listen carefully, sort out what God's voice is, what's authentic and what is not, and then one has to act upon that accordingly. I think that this applies in every era, applies to us personally in our prayer for sure. It applies to us as a culture as well, too. I would say if I can offer this, that right now in the world around us, there's lots of voices swirling around that demand our attention, lots of chaos out there, rocks getting split and strong winds and fireworks and things that are going to supposed to be making us upset and anxious. And like Elijah, it's our job to step back and ask the question, what in all the world around me that I'm listening to is helpful and what is not? What is God's voice and what is not? What is going to lead me to peace and to joy and the fullness of salvation? What's going to take me away from that? We need to sort this out all the time. I think that today, if I can offer it, I think that careful listening to God's voice in our world is in short supply. I don't hear a lot of it going on around us right now. Lots of chatter, lots of things that are supposed to make me upset, anxious and afraid, sure. But I don't hear a lot of people, myself included, unfortunately, sorting through what's authentic and what is not, and stepping back and making calm, patient, reasonable decisions. Rather, there's much panic and fear and division. Those things are not of God. And critical to being able to sort out God's voice from all the chatter around us, what's authentically helpful versus what is not, is silence and is quiet. Elijah tried to get that on his mountaintop, and when he finally got it, he could hear what God was trying to say authentically. For us too, if we're going to hear God speaking to us today, we need quiet. And we need to silence some of the chatter that we're exposed to on a constant basis. I think without turning off the TV, the radio, the media, the social media feed, and tuning some of it out, we're not going to know how to handle our current situation in the world. We will not hear God with all the chatter and the fireworks around us. So one lesson among a thousand from the first reading is careful listening, quiet listening, and acting with prudence and responsibility on God's voice accordingly. That applies no matter what, every era, every circumstance, every person, no exceptions. Elijah is a model of how to handle life. That's what this is all about. Which leads to the gospel. And if only we had hours for this gospel, as I often say, but I do love the story so much from Matthew. It's an awesome scene. So let's unpack it just a little bit. With this idea of Elijah in mind about careful listening for what God's trying to say and acting on it accordingly as prudent, responsible believers in God's power. In the gospel, what does Jesus do? He feeds the multitudes, and then he does something interesting, which he doesn't often do in the gospels. He dismisses the disciples by saying, "You must get in the boat." He makes them get in the boat. It's an interesting choice of words. Why would God make them go out under the water like that? What's he doing? God does so, the Lord does so, because he knows that only once they're out in the situation which he knows is coming, are they going to learn some things they must learn about who God is, about his nature and his power, and they can learn about faith and about themselves. So you must get in the boat, he's telling them, because if you don't, he doesn't say, you won't learn what you need to learn with what's about to happen to you. God knows what he's going to do with this situation. They must learn about him and about faith, and this is how it's going to happen. Out they go onto the Sea of Galilee, and as is often common in that part of the world, given the microclimates that surround the Sea of Galilee, a storm comes up, happens all the time on that body of water, and they're caught by surprise, and they begin to panic. Now, if you're Jewish, you don't want this situation. If you're Jewish, you're afraid of the water. Historically, hard things have happened when it comes to water. Think of the Egyptians in the Red Sea. Think of Noah and the Ark. Think of Jonah and the large fish. Things don't go well in the water if you are Jewish. You see what it can do. So for them on this body water, and Matthew's trying to capture this mood deliberately, this is the epitome of their worst nightmare. This represents all that's out of control, all that's chaotic, all that's going to do them in. They don't know what to do with this perfect storm situation. Worst thing they could possibly fear if you're in their particular background. Adding to it, they think to themselves that God is not paying attention. He's not there, apparently. He's not in the boat. Now, we know, of course, that God is paying attention. Jesus is at prayer when all this is happening, and whenever that happens, we know he is with his Father. Whereas his Father, he is everywhere. So in the prayer of the moment, Jesus sees exactly what's happening to his friends and to his people. He knows what they're going through. He's not aloof to it or distant from it. He is aware, but they don't realize that. Time passes. It says the fourth watch of the night must come. That is Matthew's way of saying this took a really long time. The fourth watch is almost dawn. So this went on and went on and went on. Imagine how long it must have felt to them in the boat, all the panic when this took all blessed night. And they asked themselves, I'm sure, when's this going to end? How are we going to get out of this? What are we going to do? Paddle harder was, I'm sure, their solution. No? Finally, Jesus does come. And what he does is, and this is how he shows himself to be who he really is to his friends, so they learn his identity. He does what they would have known from the Psalms and the prophets from long ago. He strides across the waters. It's biblical language. Only God can command the waters, and they know that. Only God can walk across the seas, as the Psalms say so beautifully. Only God takes the chaos of the deep, and he fills it with his voice. So out he comes to his friends. And they have a dialogue with Peter leading the conversation. Peter questioning, testing, prodding, if it really is you, just like Israel has always tested God, Peter is no different than us or the Israelites. Jesus responds by saying, well, sure, come on out. Come out of the boat and walk as I walk on the waves and share in my power. Deepen your faith, strengthen your trust, grow your hope. Peter walks out, and as long as his eyes are on the Lord, as you know, listening to his word and meeting his gaze, he does fine. When his faith breaks, he sinks. And what does Jesus do? Reaches out to save him. As God always does when we ask for help. Save me, Lord, I'm going to drown, Peter says. When we ask for help, God is there. And when it's all over with, they've learned how their faith needs to deepen, who God really is. This God is mighty, he's in control, he has us all in his grasp, and they worship him. It ends by saying they did him homage, which in Matthew happens in key points along the storyline of his gospel, to worship the one true God. We can say a lot more about the story, I'm going fast, to make a pattern for you, right? Jesus is working on a pattern with them. Into the boat, let things that are hard come to you, call out to me, and I'm there. I will pray with you and talk with you, meet my gaze, I'll rescue you when you fall, and you will worship. That is the pattern of the Christian life. It's established in the scene, and it's supposed to be reenacted in every single era until the end of time. How does it happen to us today? If it's a pattern, well, how do we fit into it? Lots of ways. On a personal level, how does Jesus make us get into the boat? He does it by allowing us to face challenges. Every time in life when something happens to us that's unexpected or hard, or throws us out of our comfort zone, and makes us have to panic a little bit, the Lord allows these things for the same reasons. Because he wants us to learn who he is, to sharpen our sense of God, which is deficient in some way, and to let our faith be deepened by the experience. He does not waste a chance to grow us. So it happens in marriages, it happens in our personal prayer, it happens at work when jobs become difficult, it happens at home, happens in communities, happens to a culture, happens all the time. Whenever challenges come at us, it's like God saying to us, get out on the water. I'm making you get into the boat. This will not be easy for you, but you must go through it. What do we do in those situations? Oftentimes, our first reaction is to think, like the disciples, that God's not there, he's not paying attention, and he's gone off on some break somewhere to leave us to struggle, and we get mad, perhaps. We call out to him, I hope, and in the midst of all of it, as we keep looking for God, he does come in our prayer and in the community and in the sacraments and our rituals, especially in his word that is preached. He is always with his church. He never, ever walks out on us. We just have to watch for him and look for him and hear him, think of Elijah, when he's calling out to us. And he even lets us, like Peter, push him a little bit. Is it really you, we sometimes say to God, and test and kind of prod. And he calls our bluff when things are hard and says, sure, come out of the boat. Step out of what makes you comfortable. Hand over your control. Stop thinking that all by yourself, you're supposed to fix this. It's not going to work. Paddle harder ain't going to help you now, God will often say to us. Rely on me. And as long as our gaze is on the Lord in our prayer each day, as long as we're talking to him all the time and listening to him, as long as we meet his gaze, we're okay. We take our gaze off of him and start looking at all the fireworks and the chaos around us, then the anxiety comes and we sink. We get divided and we get at each other's throats. That's when everything falls apart. If we reach out and call out and say, save me, he always comes. He wants us to get to the point where we realize that we need help and that we can't fix it on our own, and only at that point does he really truly grab us by the hand. And when we come through it, our faith has been deepened, our sense of God has grown, and we worship. We come here like this morning to the altar and we say to God, you are Lord, you are mighty, you are the God who is in control, and I give my heart to you. So Elijah's project of listening is our project of listening, and the disciples' journey on the choppy seas must be ours at certain times in life as well. It's just necessary, isn't it? Not enjoyable, not fun, but indispensable in the ongoing walk and need of faith. So one more piece to build on this a little bit, if I may. So if all that's true, and it is, what does it say about our current cultural context? Because I get the sense, I have it personally, and I hear it from many people who talk to me, many of you and others, that many of us feel right now a lot like the scene in this gospel, where we're on the choppy seas, that the ship called America is being buffeted by lots of forces that are very hard, questions of social unrest and of the things that are something of an upheaval for our otherwise delicate republic. It seems to be tough right now. And there are, face it, lots of things around us that are causing us anxiety. So take the COVID situation, which continues to be with us all the time. What does it say about our situation in light of the gospel? How do we understand this? Here we are on the choppy seas of the culture and the world. We should ask ourselves the question, to stay with COVID for a second, as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, as followers of him, how does a believer's response to a worldwide pandemic that we face, how does it look different than a non-believer or someone who doesn't have faith and doesn't understand life and death as the Christian does? How should our attitude be different than somebody else's? It ought to be different. It ought to be an exercise in faith and an exercise in this whole gospel story and in the Elijah encounter on the mountaintop. That's what should be the case. But I have to say, looking around the last several months, I don't sense on many of our parts, myself included, unfortunately, that our response looks a whole lot different than anybody else's. It looks very secular. It looks very fearful. It looks very anxiety-ridden. It looks very, very bleak, frankly. And as a witness in the world of a different way to think, we are, many of us, myself included, not doing the best job, in my opinion. So what does one say in light of all of it? I think that a believer understands that care for the vulnerable and the sick and those who are most in need on the edges is in our DNA, and that is the right reaction from us. It's a reaction of the heart, and it's important, and we don't want to ever dismiss things that are dangerous in the world. That would be the wrong response. At the same time, I think that right now our reaction as a society, if we go back to the gospel story, is paddle harder, control more, try and outsmart, try and tame a force of nature like the water and the winds that frankly we cannot tame. And I think that the anxiety that causes, the vision it stirs, the anger it engenders, the isolation, the frustration, the dehumanizing things that we have to go through these days, those things are not from God, and they are not helpful or healthy or good. And what does God want us to do as a culture and as a world? To call to him and say to him, on our own, we can't fix this. And we want to understand, Lord Jesus, that you are God and we are not, and all things that we rely on to usually solve our problems might not work this time. In the gospel story, they only were saved by keeping their eyes on the Lord Jesus, fixed squarely on him. I think as persons, as believers, as a society, and as a world, that's the only way forward on all these hard questions. And not to dismiss things that are helpful, like science and whatnot, of course, but to put them in the right place. They're not God, as the story shows. Only God is God. God is always inviting us, I think, to see that we're passing through right now is just time on a choppy sea. The waves are high, it seems scary, there's all this anxiety, all this fear, all this frustration, all of these things that are so divisive. It's a stormy sea. God says to us, I know what's going on, I am fully aware, and I'm inviting all of you to understand that I am mighty, that I have power, that you're all in my hand, and that I want you to reach out and ask me for help. And this is going to go on and on and on to the fourth watch of the dawn until you do. Because only then will you learn who you are, who I am, and what I want to do for you, which is save you from fear and anxiety and division and unrest and hatred. None of that has a place in God's kingdom. And as believers, we know that in our bones. At least we're supposed to. Never waste a crisis. Isn't that the phrase? That's what this is. So long story short, I am, if you will, in my better days, happy to be on the boat right now with all of you, figuring out where we're going to go next, because I know God is taking us somewhere that we have to go. And I don't enjoy it, I don't like it, but I know what he wants me to do. He wants me to look at him and tune everything else around me out that is not his voice, and is not what he wants, not his plan, but watch him. And he wants all of us to watch him. And as we do, we will show the world the way forward. It's not paddle harder. It's admitting that we're control freaks and that only God is in charge. And when we get to that point, the storm is going to go away. That's what he wants us to understand. We're blessed, therefore, to be together in the ship. The Lord is near us. He loves us. And I hope that, like Elijah, we'll listen carefully. Like the disciples, we'll keep our eyes on him, know that God is near, and then when he stretches out his hand to save us, as he will do, as he's always done, we will do him worship with joy in our hearts and trust in our hearts and trust in his plan, which is perfect in every era, including our own.